So today is May 19th, the 25th of ER.
Sorry, Stacey, is it the sheet you sent yesterday?
Yep.
So where are you on the sheet? Because yours looks different to what I'm looking at
Oh,
in my
just
hand.
because, here, I'll go to the top. You there? You see it now? Okay. So we are continuing on in Shmuel Bet Perek Kaf. We're starting with Pasuk Dalet. We are aware of the beginning of the Civil War, but first David took care of his Pilagshim, his concubines. And we learned about Sheva ben Bichri and who he was. Okay, so we're continuing. And Amasa, if you remember, he is also related.
Try telling me
Oh.
everything you want. I know it's wonderful.
Alexa thought I said Alexa when I said Amasa. Alexa, be quiet. Sorry. Okay. So he is related and he was the general for Avshalom. And David has plans to make him his general to replace Yoav. And we talked about whether he was angry at Yoav for having killed Avshalom. And this is why he's doing this sort of to spite him. But there's also some strategic unification aspects here also of unifying the camp of Avshalom with David's camp. So that's going to come into play here. There are just another word of introduction. There are two gory murders here. And we are only going to deal with the first one in this one. And both of them have halachic problems. The second one is going to be much more problematic halachically, but we're just going to focus on the first one here. Okay. Vayomer hamelech el Amasa, hazak li et ish Yehuda shloshet yamim ve'ata po amod. So the king said to Amasa, call together for me the men of Yehuda within 3 days, and you will then stand here. So meaning you have 3 days to call together everybody. So if you look at Metzudat David here, ad shloshet yamim, until like that's your deadline to get everyone together. Ve'ata po amod, shuvi mehem lamod po. You'll come back here and stand here, ki ratzah lahamido l'sar hatzava tachat Yoav, because that's when he would have appointed him officially as the general under Yoav. Hey, vayelech Amasa lehazik et Yehuda, and then we're going to focus both on the ketav and the kri at some point, not until later though. So we read it as vayocher min hamoed asher yadu. So he went to call together all the men of Yehuda, but he tarried, yocher. Vayichar would mean he was held up, as opposed to he, like something, we'll see when we get to it, but I just want you to like realize that this could be significant. So he passed the time, the appointed time. Okay, so Rashi there says, and again, this is just a hint. Well, we will get to it at the end. Vayocher min hamoed, he was late from the appointed time. Ashkachin hu l'rabanan depatchu v'masechet k'di'ita v'sanhedrin. So why was he late, according to Rashi? Because he found the rabbis that they had just started a new masechet of Gemara, whatever that means for this pre-Talmudic time. Okay? So they just started learning some oral law, and he joined in. And apparently lost track of time. And we're actually gonna look at the Gemara and Sanhedrin, but we need to know more details before we see that. Okay? It also speaks to Rabbi Ian Schaefer talks about this, the greatness of Jewish leaders, that you have these generals in war who can be distracted by a good bit of learning in Gemara. So they're both warriors, but they're also learned men. So to have that in mind is also interesting. Okay, Vav, Vayomer David El Avishai. Sorry, I forgot to. Okay. Ata Yerelanu Sheva ben Bichri min Avshalom. So he said to Avishai, so again, if you look at Metzudat David, Avishai is another one of the sons of Tzruya. Lo ratzah me'ata l'tzavot l'Yoav. He's specifically not talking to Yoav. He didn't want to command Yoav. Ki haya ko'es alav al hargoat Avshalom, because he was angry at him for killing Avshalom. So he's purposely trying to exclude Yoav, and he's talking to Avishai. And he says, now Sheva ben Bichri will be worse to us than Avshalom. Atakach et adei Adonecha. Please take the servants of your Lord. Vayirdof acharav and chase after him. Pain matzalo arim bitzurot vehitzil einenu. Lest he find himself fortified cities and he be saved before our eyes. Let's just read the whole thing and then we'll go back to the Malbim. Vayitzu acharav anshe Yoav. So now Avishai, as much as David wants to exclude Yoav, Yoav is still the general. So they all went out. So the men of Yoav went out after him. V'hachreti v'apleti. We've seen that phrase before. It means, you see it translated here as the slingers and the warriors. It could have been two families that were especially known for being good warriors. V'chol ha'giburim, and all of the strong men. V'yatzu mi'Yerushalayim l'erdof acharei Sheva ben Bichri. And they went out from Jerusalem to chase after Sheva ben Bichri. Chet hem im ha'aven ha'gdola asher b'giv'on. So they were next to the great stone, which was in Givon. Ve'amasa ba lifneham. And Amasa, it's almost as if they happened to catch up to where Amasa was. Ve'yoav chagur mido levusho. So Yoav, and we're going to see it says military coat as apparel here. So that's in the commentary. But and madim is the modern word for Israeli army uniforms. So he's girded with this mido levusho, this uniform, ve'alav chagor cherev, and on it, cherev mitzumedet, and on it is this sword, which is sheathed, almotnav, on his waist, his loins, b'ta'ara, in its sheath, ve'hu yatzav etapol. And he went forth, and it fell out. Okay, so it's hard to imagine. We're going to see a few different commentaries of what exactly this is describing. But basically, he's ready to use it. Okay, so he's dressed up in his military uniform, and there's a sword that he's somehow. What's that called when people, handy people, can like make something to do something else, like. He's rigged it. There's a funnier word. He's rigged it so that the sword will be accessible to him. Okay, so let's look at the Malvim now.
It didn't just fall out onto the ground or something?
It seems that way from the pshat, but the way the commentaries explain it is that it was on purpose. Okay. Ve'yitzu mi'Yerushalayim l'erdof. Ratzon l'mar lo yatzu lifgo be'amasa v'chelo v'lelechid imo. So they went out of Jerusalem to chase Ben Bichri, and they didn't intend to meet Amasa. Something happened to Amasa, they didn't know what, and so they were just going to go on their own. The goal was not to meet up with him. Rak l'erdof techef b'hachayel asher imahem, just to go immediately with the troops that were with them, be'ofen shepagu et Amasa b'mikra, and then they just happened to meet Amasa by coincidence. Chagor mido levusho, so the general of the army had this special clothing. So everyone would be able to recognize that he was in charge. And this is what Yoav was wearing. Because David had not yet removed him from his leadership. Okay, so the Malbim, I don't know where, but he explained that levush can be used to word, this is in Esther, levush malchut, where it says she was wearing kingship, which is a very strange phrase. You would expect it to say levush bigdei malchut, the clothing of kingship, but it's just some sort of recognizable royal clothing that she's wearing. This is actually the pasuk that proves in Masechet Megillah that Esther was one of the seven prophetesses, because it's in this expression of wearing royalty, it's as if she's wearing Ruach HaKodesh, that Hashem is with her. And then another example from Malachim Bet. Ve'alav chagor cherev mitzumedet amat nav v'tara. So on him is...
Sorry, what was he saying there, Stacey? What does he mean about your Av? What did he say about Levush? Levush implies royalty on its own, just the word on its own.
No, he's in Esther. It implies some kind of royal clothing because it's levush malchut.
What's he saying here then?
So here, levush I think he's saying levush implies some sort of uniform that signifies something. So the levush of Yoav was his general clothing. That he was a general, not in general. That he was a general of the army. So he's just defining the terms here of why it's worded this way. And then he gives these examples of levush being something on its own. Levush malchut, levush l'chol of de'abal. Mm-hmm. All those who worship Baal. Okay. So he girded on him was this sword. I think it might be a narrow, that was narrowed on his loins in its sheaf. Ratzon lomar sheyesh ta'ar shehu mitzumtzam kemida tacherev v'davukla. So he wants to say that there are sheaths, right? That's the word sheath, that are narrow, like the size of the sword, and it sticks in it. So there are different sized sheaths or scabbards. Some of them, the sword fits in very snugly. That's what he's describing here. V'az tolim hacherev al matnav. And then you can just hang the sword on your loins, whatever this is, because the sword isn't going to fall out of the scabbard. V'atar lo yipol ma'atzmo, right? The scabbard won't fall from itself. V'yesh ta'ar sherachav min hamida, but there are those sheaths or scabbards that are wider, v'yipol ma'atzmo, and they will fall off on their own. V'az tolim ha-ta'ar al-motnav, and then you have to hang the sheaf on your loins. Okay, so I guess this is, you have to understand that it's probably upside down in this case. So if it's upside down, the sword, and the sheath, then you have to connect, because if you connected it by the sword, the sheath would just fall out. V'chein haya po, and that's what Yoav had, she'atar haita mitzumedet al matnav, that the sheath was on his loins, lo hacherav, and not the sword. So it's connected by the sheath. U'bezeh kishenafal hata'ar yatsa hacherav me'atzmo. And then when the sheath fell down, the sword came out by itself. V'amasa lo hirgish baza. But Amasa wasn't paying attention to this. So I guess maybe he's explaining why would he have it connected by the sheath, or why would he have it connected by the sword? And this explains that some swords were meant to be connected to the person by the sword, and some were meant to be connected by the sheath. And so Amasa wasn't paying attention to that. And Yoav had the kind that should have been connected by the scabbard, but he connected it by the sword so that the scabbard would fall off. Okay, and Rashi, let's just read
it. I don't understand at all what you just said. I'm sorry, the technicalities. I understand that he had something that made it fall out, but what actually fell out? The sword fell out?
No, the scabbard, the sheath, the covering.
What's a scabbard? A scabbard's the same as the sheath?
Yeah, it's the covering of the sword. So Yoav was able to look like he was all protected with his weapons, when in reality he was exposing it so that he would be better able to kill him.
Robert Alter has a description.
You mean it was a ploy? Is that what he said?
Yeah.
He did it on purpose?
Yeah, it was a ploy. What's Robert Alter's description, Louis?
He had on a belt for a sword strapped to his waist. As he came forward, it fell out. Robert Alter says the sword, often as here, a weapon closer to a long dagger, was customarily strapped against the left thigh for easy unsheathing across the lower belly by a right-handed fighter. Yoav may have deliberately fastened the sword to his waist so that it would slip out of the scabbard as he leaned forward to embrace Amasa.
Okay.
And then he says that Josephus, reading of this verse, remains the most persuasive one, that the wily Yoav, deliberately allowing his dagger to slip to the ground as he bends forward, then snatches it up with his left hand while his right hand grasps the beard.
Okay, brilliant. That was much more eloquently stated. Thank you. Okay, so here's what Rashi says, fastened to his loins, clinging to his body, to the width of his loins, and not in a manner that one customarily fastens his sword, in order that it should fall easily and not necessitate removal from its sheath. Okay, he went forth towards Amasa, and it fell out, the short sword from its sheath, since it was smooth and sharpened, and it was not suspended at the side of his hip, but to the width of his loins. Thus, almost as soon as he bent toward the ground, it fell from its sheath, where he grasped it with his right hand, without Amasa becoming aware of it. Okay, so Rashi and Robert Alter are very similar here. Okay. So now, if you have a weak stomach, this is not for you. Okay. Vayomer Yoav la'amasa. Yoav said to Amasa, Hashalom ata achi. You can imagine it, like the warmth. Is all well with you, my brother. V'tochez yad yamin Yoav v'zaken Amasa v'nashaklo. And he used his right hand to grab the beard of Amasa and he kissed him. So he's bringing him close through his beard. It's also interesting to think that they were all bearded, you know, what they looked like as warriors. So he kissed him. Okay, so this is a very warm greeting, very intimate greeting, you know, kissing and grabbing his beard, which apparently was a normal thing that wouldn't be cause for worry. Ve'amasa lo nishmar b'cherev asher b'yad Yoav, and Amasa was not paying attention to the sword that was in the hand of Yoav. Ve'yakehu ba el hachomesh, and Yoav killed him in the fifth rib. Ve'yishpoch me'av artsa, and all of his innards spilled out to the ground. And he didn't even have to stab him a second time, and he died. And then Yoav and Avishai just continue on in their pursuit of Sheva ben Bichri. And a man was standing there from the young men of Yoav. And this is unusual in that it doesn't. There was nothing that gave me any hint of who this person was. It really is just an anonymous character. And he said, anybody who desires Yoav and anybody who's with David should go after Yoav now. And Amasa was like rolling, or his blood was spilling out of him, wallowing, it says, in blood, in the middle of the road, the highway. Vayar ha'ish. Ki amad kol ha'am vayasev et amasa min hamasila hasadeh vayashlach ala beged kasher ra'a kol haba alav amad. So anybody who saw him would just stand there because the nation, ki amad kol ha'am. So this man, I think the one who was saying this, he saw that all the people stayed standing. They didn't go after Yoav and Avishai. And so he veered Amasa from the road towards the field, and he threw a piece of clothing over him when he saw that everyone who was coming was standing. Okay, so Malvim is going to talk about this double standing and differentiate between the two. Yud Gimel Kasher Hogah Min Hamesila, when he was removed from the highway, Avar kol ish achrei Yoav lirdof achrei Sheva ben Bichri. Then everyone continued on following Yoav to chase after Sheva ben Bichri. Ve'avor b'chol shivtei Yisrael, avela u'beit ma'aka v'kol ha'beirayim ve'yikalu ve'avo af acharav. Okay, so now the pronouns here are difficult. So he passed through all the tribes of Israel to Avel, to Beit Ma'aka, and all the Berites, and they gathered together, and they went after him too. So who's the he? So we're going to see in one of the commentaries that he is Sheva ben Bichri, that he went to all of these tribes of Israel, and he gathered everyone together. Okay, and then we have this weird pause in the middle of the pasuk. I couldn't really think of any reason for it, and nobody commented on it, but I just wanted to point it out. Okay, so now I'm going to focus a little bit on this chomesh, this fifth rib. So we've seen it before, and we've seen it before with some of the same characters. So the first time was Shmuel Bet Perek Bet, and it's when Avner, who was Shaul's general, killed Asael in the chomesh with his sword. Okay? And after that happened, after Avner killed him, then they gave chase, and Yoav then seeks revenge for his brother, and he kills Avner in the Chomesh as revenge. So that, we talked about that then, and it seemed pretty justified. as revenge, but it still gave way to Yoav's violent nature. And we see that even more here. And the question is, how can we justify it in this case? Okay, so first we're going to look at the Malbim. So Hasheilot, the questions. Masha Katuv Kasher Ra'a Kol Haba Alav Amad Hu Sfat Yeter V'Kafel. Okay, so that double omed that the people were standing, they were standing and then they were standing again, it seems redundant. Bayar Ha'ish Ki Amad Kol Ham. So the man saw that the entire nation was just standing there, not going with Yoav and Avishai. So in the beginning, the entire nation was standing because they didn't want to pass by the corpse of Amasa, because he was just lying there in the street. So then he put him in the field. And then he saw that they were still standing there. So those who weren't there at the beginning, so these are a lot of men going by, they stood and they to ask questions and to wonder what happened. And then he put the clothing on him to cover him so that there wouldn't be any more questions and nobody would get distracted and they would just follow Yoav and Avishai. Kasher mifaresh she'el Avru Tekef Kasher Hogamin Hamasila. So those who were initially standing, the first group of men, they immediately passed on once the body was removed from the street. Veavor Peverish Hamahari, so Abarvanel explains, Shemusav al Shava ben Bichri. So this is what I explained before, that this last Pasuk with the weird pronouns of whose passing through all the tribes of Israel, that is about Shava ben Bichri. And that's what Abarbanel says. Shehu kvar avar b'kol shivtei Yisrael. He'd already gone through all of the tribes of Israel, ad avelo beit ma'acha, these places. V'hem nikalu af acharav, k'mo shenikalu achar Avshalom. And they gathered after him, just as they had gathered after Avshalom. Okay? Okay, and then we have this long Gemara. I think we're going to finish early. I apologize. Okay, so here's the Gemara. It's in Sanhedrin. We've actually seen a lot of Gemaras from around these pages that all deal with David. And just, it's interesting because it's in Masechet Sanhedrin, which is talking about the rules of court and protocol and all those things. And these are cases that completely go out of protocol. It's, you know, where people are killed and they don't get a fair trial, fair jury. So let's just read it in English. But what is the reason you killed Amasa? This says Avner, but I'm pretty sure it's meant to be Yoav, because it doesn't make any sense, and it's not in the Gemara itself. So just keep that in mind. So Yoav said to him, I killed Amasa in punishment for him having rebelled against the king. As it is written, and the king said to Amasa, muster to me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be you here present. And Amasa went to call the men of Judah, but he was later than the set time that he had assigned to him. Okay, so that we read. Solomon said to him, Amasa was not, so this is, I think this is taking place, if you remember, we've mentioned this before, when David dies and he speaks to Shlomo, he charges Shlomo with certain actions about people that David, for whatever reason, couldn't take care of during his lifetime, and he tells Shlomo to take care of them. So one of those people that he tells Shlomo to take care of him is Yoav. So I think this is a conversation between Shlomo and Yoav about why he might be guilty or not. Okay, so Shlomo said to him, Amasa was not guilty of rebelling against the king because he interpreted the words ach and rak in a restrictive manner, and in that way, he limited the king's authority. So this is this Gemara. And the words ach and rak, when they appear in the Torah, seem to be filler words, but the rabbis read into them. So if there's a seemingly blanket halacha, but you have the word ach or rak around it, then that blanket halacha could become limited through the use of that word in the Torah of Ach and Rak. It limits the seemingly general principle that's being made in the Pasuk, if that makes sense. Okay, how so? Amasa found the men of Judah starting to read a new tractate. So these are the words that Rashi quoted. He said to himself, it is written, any man who rebels against your encampment and will not listen to your words in all that you command him, he shall be put to death. So this is the pasuk from Yehoshua, indicating that the king of Israel has unlimited power. Based on these words alone, one might have thought that the king must be obeyed even when that would lead to abstention from the study of the words of Torah. Therefore, that same verse states, only, rak, be strong and of good courage. The word rak is a restrictive term that serves to limit the king's authority in a situation where obeying his command will minimize the study of Torah. Consequently, Amasa was justified when he did not muster the men of Judah at the appointed time, and you had no right to kill him. Okay, so just to review, we have this verse from Yehoshua, so it's not from the Torah in this case, that everybody has to listen to every word of the king or he'll be put to death. Okay? But then it says, continues the pasuk, only, rak, be strong and of good courage, which then limits this law and says this is only relevant if he's not learning Torah. So because Amasa was engaged in learning Torah, he didn't fall under this verse of the king being able to put him to death for not following his exact order. And that's his justification for being late. Solomon continued, rather the opposite is true. That man, you, Yoav, rebelled against the king. As it is written, then tidings came to Yoav, for Yoav had followed after Adoniah, though he had not followed after Avshalom. Okay, so Adoniah is another one of David's kings that we're not going to really get to know until Malachim, because after David dies, he tries to very subversively take the kingship away from Shlomo HaMelech. And in that situation, Yoav actually joins forces with Adoniahu and rejects Shlomo. Obviously, he chose the wrong person and he's going to lose, even though he had not followed against Avshalom. And Yoav fled to the tent of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. Okay, so that's all in a pasuk. So the question is, why does it mention he had not followed after Avshalom? Yoav followed Adoniah, thereby rebelling against Solomon, the lawful king. Gemara asks, what does the verse mean to teach when it says that Yoav did not follow Avshalom? Rabbi Huda says it serves to teach that Yoav wanted to follow Avshalom, but in practice, he did not follow him. The Gemara asks, if he wanted to do so, what is the reason that Yoav did not follow Avshalom? Rabbi Elazar says, when Avshalom rebelled against his father, David was still in full possession of his vitality, meaning he was still strong and Yoav feared him. Rabbi Yossi, son of Rabbi Hanina, says, David's stars, itztagnine, the astrologers, the planetary influences that determined his fortune, still stood for him. That's a little problematic because we have other sources that say that Jewish people are not ruled by our astrology, our fortune. We're beyond that. But in any case, as Rabbi Huda says, that Rav says, David had 400 children in his army, and all of them were sons of beautiful women taken captive from their Gentile homes during the war. And they grew their hair in a Gentile hairstyle, and they would go at the head of the troops. And they were the strong arm enforcers of the house of David, on whose loyalty David's monarchy relied. As long as David was supported by this force, Yoav was afraid to challenge him. Okay, so it's giving you other insight into Yoav and exactly how loyal he was to the king or how loyal he was to his own position and power and sticking with who he thought was the stronger ruler. The Gemara notes, and those who view Yoav in a negative light disagree with the opinion of Rabbi Abba Bar Kana. As Rabbi Abba Bar Kana says, were it not for David who'd studied Torah, Yoav would not have been able to wage war successfully. And were it not for the military acumen of Yoav, David would not have been able to study Torah. As it is written, and David executed judgment and justice to all his people, and Yoav, son of Tsruya, was over the army. What is the reason that David executed judgment and justice to all his people? He was able to do so because Yoav Sanhatria was over the army, assisting him in fighting his battles. And what is the reason that Yoav Sanhatria was over the army? He was able to do so because David executed judgment and justice to all his people. So I included that here because you see both positions on Yoav. Was Yoav always constantly loyal to David and wanted to defend David at all costs, as you see in here? Or, as we saw in the beginning, was Yoav just strategic in terms of staying in power? And did he just chose the strongest person always, and he was never really cared about David? So that is Yoav, in any case, in killing Amasa, Yoav justified that he was rebelling against the king. And Shlomo is saying, you're actually wrong. The one exception for not following the king's order is to be learning Torah. And then the Maharsha, Chidushei Agadot, gives more basis for that in the Ketav in the Kri that we looked at before. So Amasa Moreid B'Malchut, Amar Le Amasa Achin V'Rakin. Yeshalmar de Darish Ze Midachtiv Vayichar B'Yud V'Kri V'Yochar B'Vav. So he is reading into this drash of whether or not Amasa held himself up of his own accord to rebel against the king, or whether he was held up by this Torah study, in which case he was exempt from rebelling against the king. So he says that this is a drash from the Ketiv, which says Vayichar, that's what's written with a Yod, and the Kri, which we actually read, Vayochar, which is written with a Vav. Darash Vayichar me'atzmo. Kamo shechashav Yoav shehaya mored b'malchut. And so if it were the Yod, Vayichar, then he would have held himself up as a way of rebellion against the kingship, which is what Yoav thought. V'karinan v'yochar, but we don't read it that way, that he rebelled against the king. We read it v'yochar, b'vav, shenit acher al yedei acherim, that he was held up by way of other people, not of his own accord, de'ashkachin hu de'patich lahu b'masachta, that they had opened up a new masachet. V'darish le'gam kein mitachtiv v'yochar min ha'moed, v'gomer de'haynu shenit acher min ha'masachet. And this, so when it says, Vayochar min hamoed, so we translated that as he was delayed from the appointed time, but the drash is he was delayed from the masechet, miseder acher, miseder moed. So moed is one of the six sedarim of the Mishnah, and it's one of the Gemara, obviously, also. Moed has in it Rosh Hashanah, Yoma, Megillah, like all the different things on holidays, Beitza. And so when it says min ha-moed, not the appointed time, but from the Seder Moed, the Gemara on Moed, shepatchu v'askinan bath, that's what they were busy learning. Okay, so let's just look back in that pasuk. Let's read it back in that way. Okay, so it says, Vayelech Amasa la'azikat Yehuda. So Amasa went to call together Yehuda. And then you hear, Vayichar min ha-moed asher yadu. He delayed himself from the appointed time that they had appointed him, okay? Meaning he wanted to rebel, which was Yoav's perspective, versus Vayochar min ha-moed asher yado. He was delayed by learning the tractate of the Seder of Moed from what they had appointed, okay? So that is the end of Amasa, the end of his life. The remainder of the parak, we're going to talk about Sheva ben Bichri. It's a really fascinating halachic discussion. To see how much we can get into it, because it'll be really interesting. So I look forward to next week.
Can I just ask, in the second explanation, when it says he was delayed min ha-moed, does that mean because of Seder Moed? Is that what you said?
Yeah, exactly.